Hey, it's Cole Swindell, and when I spend 200 days a year rolling down the highway, the bus can start to feel smaller than a guitar case. Everyone wonders how I stay chill while the hours crawl by. Truth is, one good luck spent on Chumba, and suddenly the trip feels a whole lot shorter. Finding your space, even when there isn't much to spare. Need some chill? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNCs apply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another one of our political chats in which Dan and I are going to be discussing whatever it is that's happening in the Labour Party. Because something very interesting is happening in the Labour Party. And it's been very public. But there's a kind of opacity to events that I think a lot of people aren't really seeing the underlying motions and realizing what these things actually mean.
Well, I think a lot of it's quite obvious, even though they refuse to expand on any of it. We just have no... Starmer has consistently failed to offer his motives for doing almost anything that he's done.
Yes.
Which is getting him into trouble at the moment now, because he's talking about rules and procedures, but he's not talking about is why I did any of these things in the first place.
Yeah, and the thing is, there's a lot of circumstantial evidence
yes.
that surrounds Starmer
yes.
and the networks of which he is a part that suggests there may have been motives behind it all after all. He just can't really say it in public.
No. Well, definitely some of the stuff. I mean, I can only imagine where you were going to go with this, but if you've included everything that I'm thinking of, no, we definitely can't talk about all of it.
Well, we'll see.
Yes.
And we'll see how the factions in Labour are dealing with this.
Yes.
So I think it's very, very interesting, actually. So you remember that last week, Starmer had to address Parliament over the vetting decision surrounding Peter Mandelson. And he looked kind of terrified, frankly. And look at his body language there.
Well, I heard about it. I haven't watched this yet. Are we going to watch much of this?
We're not going to watch it. I'm just going to talk about it. But you can see the faces on yes. Rachel Reeves and David Lammy there. Starmer's body language is quite small and defensive. And he looked, frankly, terrified throughout this whole thing.
Well, Rachel Reeves is sitting there like an aged King Charles spaniel waiting to die.
Lammy looks like he's just miserable.
Lammy looks like he's sat outside the headmistress's office
yes.
after having done something very naughty. And Starmer, he's just...
I'm now going to argue my case, even though I know I'm in the wrong.
Yes.
Yeah, that's basically what's happening. And he spends this whole time hiding behind proceduralism. It's like the procedures were followed. There was an error with the procedure, but I had it changed. And Badenoch had him at one point bang to rights on a minor technicality. it's really petty.
For you and I, we'd be like, what are you talking about? Who cares?
It literally is, right?
But for him...
So the question that Badenoch got him on was when he told Parliament about... when he found out the Mandelson had failed his vetting and he didn't tell Parliament that previous Wednesday, even though, because that was the earliest opportunity, he'd done it on like the Thursday or something. Right. So it's like, I mean, it's really, really petty.
Oh yeah. But that goes to the core of who Starmer is. And actually I'd say the reason why that's so important is because his whole attack line against Boris Johnson back in the COVID days
procedure.
Was that, specifically that you did not, that you misled Parliament and you didn't update them at the earliest possible convenience. So even though it's a day and it sounds like nothing, to him that is, I mean, that's his origin story.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's and don't get me wrong, Badenoch it was good to get him on that point because that is something that affects him. But it is also somewhat pettifogging and kind of irrelevant to the larger point that we are seeing being played out in the Labour Party in public at the moment. Like I said, Starmer changed the process so appointments can't be made until security vetting is passed. As if that was anything to do with Mandelson. Like, but we'll get to that.
But again, why did you not do the security vetting?
It's just, we'll get to it because there's a lot here, right? And Starmer, of course, claimed that he was kept ignorant by the civil service. He wasn't told about the security vetting. He didn't ask them any questions about Mandelson. So as in the allegation that we'll get to in a minute is just Starmer demanded it be Mandelson and asked nothing further.
That's the point, because he knows full well that if he doesn't ask, he can't say that he knew later when he didn't know.
Yes.
So, but you know, he didn't even meet with Mandelson before appointing him as U.S. ambassador.
It's really weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
Why was Peter Mandelson so important? And the most damning charge I think he made against the civil service was there was a decision made by them to hide information from him, which again is something we'll come back to in a bit. So anyway, Emily Thornberry chaired a select committee meeting with Ollie Robbins, the fired civil servant who has been taking the fall for this. And Ollie just came out swinging against Starmer. Now, this is all quite surprising because, I mean, Starmer is the probably the one politician you'd expect maximal compliance from the civil service from. He's their kind of man. He's got their kind of agenda. He believes their kind of things, and he loves their kind of procedures. So why is he at war with his own civil service?
Well, because he'd rather throw them under the bus than go under the bus himself.
Well, that's the point, isn't it? Like, in fact, that's a great point. Throwing people under the bus is exactly what Starmer does, and everyone's noticed this.
Yes.
But why is he throwing people under the bus? Which is something we'll come to. So anyway, sorry.
In fact, Ollie Robbins did say that he didn't use the term throw under the bus. He said something like, at one of these things, he was asked to give a specific on another civil servant who is connected with this, and he said some version of, oh, I'm not gonna you know throw this person under the bus or something like that. He said,
yeah,
but he said it in such a way as to be clear that he thought that was exactly what was happening to him. So that is the perception percolating through the civil service.
Very much so. So anyway, Ollie Robbins in this meeting. Said that the Cabinet Office, as in under Starmer and McSweeney, had suggested there was no need to vet Mandelson at all. They'd applied constant pressure to approve Mandelson's appointment and took a dismissive attitude to vetting, which I honestly quite believe. Mandelson was given access to the FCDO building, to low classification IT and to higher classification briefings before he was granted security clearance. I remember in advance of this, he had been essentially controlling the Labour Party with Morgan McSweeney on the spreadsheet of who can become MP or not. Well,
actually, I think it's even worse than that.
Yeah.
So, like you say, he got access to the building. Yeah. Now, that little pass that he wore around his neck that got him into the building and got him into all the secure rooms inside the building, the date on that was something like the 6th of January.
Really?
Yeah, then I forget the exact specific, but something like the 6th of January, and the vetting process began on the 8th of January.
Very interesting.
So the vetting process began after he had full access to the highest classified level.
Really strange, isn't it?
Yes.
Like how just almost incomprehensible, how could anyone have this level of access?
Well, because he's one of the original Dark Lords of the Labour Party.
And we'll, yeah. Exactly, and I think that what this is showing us is how the dark lords in the Labour Party operate, and I don't doubt that's very similar to Conservative as well. So anyway, number 10 showed no interest in the actual vetting. The entire focus was just getting Mandelson to Washington as quickly as possible. So yeah, like you say, Starmer had appointed him before the checks, no need to check the claim, and the argument that they made was Mandelson was a lord and on the Privy Council, and therefore we don't need to do any checks. It's like, okay, but he's also Peter Mandelson.
And he's only been fired, what, 3 times now from his conduct? So, I mean, why would you suspect for the man who keeps getting binned from government?
Why would you suspect anything a bit iffy about the Prince of Darkness?
Yes.
Yeah, anyway, so there's, you know, lots of these updates. But the same thing was applied to Matthew Doyle, who is, again, suspended from Labour over his links to a paedophile because he was campaigning for a convicted paedophile. Some reason.
Oh, a different one to Epstein. Just
yeah.
Crops up a lot.
Well, he was made a lord as well.
Yes, right? Of course.
And so that's very interesting, isn't it? It's like lords in the Labour Party who have direct links to paedophiles, convicted paedophiles. Literally, in Mandelson's case, Epstein, in Doyle's case, I can't remember the name of the chap who was campaigning for now.
It's weird that at the higher levels of government, it's such an occupational hazard that you run into pedos all the time.
Well, I don't know if I'd call it weird.
Structural?
That's more the point,
yes.
Right? And I think that's what's behind Mandelson being accelerated up the ranks by Starmer. Anyway, so yeah, the Ollie Robbins testified in complete defense of the civil service,
yes. Right,
obviously. You know, and so you can see this rift has occurred between Starmer, who expected a clean interface into the civil service, and the civil service, who wanted to interface with Starmer, but are being asked to do something they know at some point is going to come back to haunt them, right? With the Mandelson stuff. Mm. No, there was constant pressure applied. We didn't really understand. It's like, yeah, I think you probably did understand why.
I think they understood exactly what was going on. Yeah. And that's why they didn't press very hard to give Starmer an update, because they knew that Starmer knew that he didn't want to ask questions and therefore could cover himself later by saying that I didn't know.
And remember, none of this would be happening if Trump hadn't dropped the Epstein files and it had implicated Mandelson.
Yes.
Because we saw all of his
email. Oh, yeah. Mandelson would still be in post today.
Absolutely.
Yeah, with the highest level of security clearance.
Yeah. So all of these people who are currently like, yeah, I mean, Keir Starmer forced us to do it. Well, you stayed quiet and were completely complicit until it got blown up through events beyond your control that has now ruined you. This has caused all this issue. So the distance they're trying to create between Starmer's administration and the civil service just doesn't really exist. It's only accidentally that we happen to know all of these things and that this event is even blowing up in their face in the first place. I mean, Ollie Robbins was like, yeah, I regret all of this. I regret everything. He claims that he had done the process as Starmer had laid it out. And Starmer, to his credit, does seem to be in the wrong here. But again, you were completely complicit in everything. And the only reason this is happening is because of events beyond your control. Anyway, 10 Downing Street responded to this, denying the constant pressure, saying, well, we were just asking about the appointment process for the vetting. We were not needing any vetting. They say, well, we were discussing it with the Cabinet Office, Foreign Office officials, and security clearance. But these talks concluded there would need to be vetting. They denied that they were...
They had already appointed him. That's a really weak point.
Yeah, exactly.
He was terrible. In the building.
Yeah. They denied they were only leaning against clearance from Mandelson, saying the vetting body clearly recommended against, and this should have been communicated to the PM. And they refused to deny Robbins' claim that he was told to find an ambassadorship for then comms director Matthew Doyle, Lord Doyle, who was kicked out for being associated with the paedophile.
Do you know what he failed the vetting actually on?
Yes, it was business links to China and Russia.
Yeah, a Russian and Chinese firm. It was actually nothing to do with the Epstein stuff at all.
Nothing at all.
And that's why they got him through, because the advice came back and they said, well, and actually the advice, it wasn't advice at that stage. It was, he's got these links to this Russian and Chinese firm. And so they're leaning towards not. And Ollie Robinson, who was under pressure, said, well, can we put in place mitigation such as if he ever has any dealings with those two firms, then it can be disclosed and someone else can sit in the meeting and something like that. And because of those mitigations, that was how he was able to sort of squeak through clearance.
It's got weird sort of echoes of Hunter Biden being on the board of Burisma, taking money from Chinese firms and things like that.
Yeah, it's a bit like that.
Like, it feels that what's happening is actually there's a network of compromised people who become loyal through the compromat that they have on one another, and then foreign money is funneled through these networks.
And then they run the Western world.
And they happen to be, and then they just accelerate, oh, he's our man in that network, and therefore. And I'm just going to call this the Epstein network, because Epstein was clearly a core part of this.
Yes.
And it genuinely seems like paedophile compromise.
I'm sure there's other important nodes, but he was clearly one of them.
Yeah, I'm sure there are other important nodes. But he was also quite a public-facing feature of it. Mm. So an interesting thing is Emily Thornberry has been doing another select committee today, and this came out today of Philip Barton admitting that the permanent private secretary is not unheard of for them to withhold information from their bosses. Emily Thornberry, as Artemis for now points out, is stunned. But yeah, I mean, this is the kind of thing that they do. Like the permanent civil service have their own interests to protect, and they are very ideologically aligned with Labour. They obviously want to work with the Epstein network, but they do have to look out for themselves. So if it's a sensible decision not to give certain kind of information to the Prime Minister, well, then yeah, it's not unheard of that they'll withhold.
Yeah, On a broader point, that's absolutely true, and I'm sure that happens all the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
But in this particular case, it was made incredibly easy by Starmer being so remarkably uncurious.
Yes, I mean, so belligerent. I want Epps. I want
it done. Yeah. So he was belligerent before, and the moment it happened, he then didn't engage at all. He didn't ask any questions. He didn't say, how did it go? He didn't ask. He didn't even meet Mandelson. He didn't do it. He did no follow-up whatsoever. And this is a consistent theme, actually, with Starmer, that everybody reports he's just remarkably uncurious. So often there'd be a space of an hour or two a day where he takes himself off to a room and he reads a whole load of papers that have been given to him. And it is normal for a prime minister to come out of there with scribblings or points. We must do this, that. I didn't agree with that. This is fine. And people get a sense of what's going on. Starmer apparently walks out of those every time and says nothing to anybody. You don't know if he's got an opinion, if he has an opinion, what he wants you to do. And so everybody is kind of running on rails because Starmer is just kind of this blank void of not only charisma, but purpose.
Yes. And that's and the purpose is one of those interesting things. That we need to get to. Mm. But the way that I would characterize this so far is I think that what's happening is Starmer as the representative of the Epstein network in the British government is actually struggling with the deep state of Britain about this accidental bomb that Trump has dropped on them and who's going to be holding the fallout from it. Mm. And the question that is continually ducked, which you have brought up, is, why did Starmer want Mandelson? Because this is where it starts to become very evident that actually it is part of the network and it is one of those things, because otherwise there is no motive. If Starmer isn't acting as an agent of this foreign influence network, then why is he doing any of the things that he does?
Well, I could expand, but...
Well, there's more. Mm. So today, I mean, literally like an hour ago, right, Morgan McSweeney was testifying at the same select committee with Emily Thornberry chairing. The fact that it's Emily Thornberry chairing is quite important as well, because Emily Thornberry isn't part of the Epstein network, nor is she part of the primary enemies of the Epstein network.
She's a Labour grandee, but she's soft. The other part of it.
She's the soft left.
Yeah, soft left, yeah.
She's the sort of person who posts the pictures of England flags on the guy's house and goes, see, look at this, England flags. It's like, yeah, but Emily, that's normal. But, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. So anyway, she's been, I would say grilling, but it's really just lightly interviewing Morgan McSweeney.
Can we play a little bit? I've never heard it speak.
Irish accent. Very few of these people are English, by the way.
I mean, one of the other problems was that Keir didn't like him. I mean, again, for the New Statesman, Keir doesn't even like him and never really has. He's not Keir's sort of person. And
the
Foreign Office
definitely
didn't like him, as far as we can tell. And then, of course, there's all the red flags. So all of these things are problems, you know, getting in the way of Peter Mandelson becoming ambassador. But you still wanted him to be ambassador, right?
At the time in Downing Street, there was conversations about who could be the best candidate, and names were considered, and most people were making pros and cons arguments. I have to say, I know that a lot of people now say they told the Prime Minister they were against it at the time. Everything I know about how the Prime Minister works is he will consult widely, he will take a lot of views on, and if everybody else was opposed to this appointment but me, he would not have made an appointment such as that. He does like to try to build consensus within his team and to get a wide range of views.
Right. Now, this is really interesting. Thornberry is pointing out, well, look, everyone knows Starmer actually doesn't like Mandelson, right? Starmer is not the kind of guy who would willingly hang out with Mandelson. Starmer is the kind of guy who hangs out with Lord Hermer, who's his one, like, long-term friend, right? Mandelson, you know, he's a party animal. He loves socializing. He loves making connections. He loves getting dirt on people. Starmer is not. So why is Starmer insistent on Mandelson? Well, it's because it seems like he's the servant of some higher power. And what I found really interesting about McSweeney here, look how quickly, like, he thinks he's about to be attacked. Right? Watch it.
There was conversations about who could be.
Look at that. Sorry, do you think there's an assassin coming, Morgan?
That is prey animal behavior, isn't it?
That is a man who thinks he's in imminent physical danger.
He probably feels that all the time. I think most leftists feel this all the time.
I think this is about being a part of a particular kind of network.
It could be that, but leftists are very low T individuals, so
maybe. But that
they're just constantly scared. That's why they're so spiteful.
Maybe, but. Out of this, I think, is quite an important point, which is there's no natural reason that Starmer would want Mandelson.
Yeah, I can give a little bit of background on this sort of origin story of this chap here as it comes in. So basically, as we know, the early days of the new Labour movement was the great darkness himself, Tony Blair, and then his two of his arch-uncleans, which was Alistair Campbell and Peter Mandelson. And the three of them kind of did new Labour.
And there were loads of other people around, like Jack Straw. And
yeah, but those were the big three.
Yeah, they were.
Those were the dry... When Tony Blair sat down in his office and closed the doors, those were the three people in the room, and they decided the real direction of what was going to happen. Yeah. Anyway, early on in the Tony Blair government, Mandelson did whatever... however you do the dark arts of how you do his job. Presumably pentagrams were drawn, orphan children arrived, candles were lit, and he unfurled a wing, and out of the wing pit a spore plopped Morgan McSweeney. So he in the Blair government, he was a young 20-year-old brought on by Mandelson. Now, of course, Mandelson does his thing and gets involved in scandals, gets brought back, scandal, buggers off again, scandal, off he goes. But he continued to gestate in the body of the new Labour Party and continued to climb up the rank. And now he's whatever he is, mid-40s or something, and he's achieved a position of power. So a lot of people think that he is, he was, Keir Starmer's chief of staff. A far more accurate way to look at it is that Keir Starmer was his prime minister. So he was there first. And he was casting around at the end of the Corbyn era, and it's like, okay, well, I'm the functionary for the Blairite wing of this party. Corbyn can't last. Who do we go to? And he identified Starmer. He was brought into Parliament. He was then fast-tracked through the process really quickly. And when it came to be who was leader, the most powerful Labour faction, which was functionally led by him, picked Keir Starmer. So Starmer is his creation, not the other way around, right?
Correct. And he is Mandelson's creation. He's Mandelson's
He's Mandelson's creation, right.
He was advocating so hard
yes.
to get Mandelson in. And throughout this thing, he says, well, look, I didn't know. And it's like, I don't believe that, right?
Oh, yeah.
For a second. I mean, he's got a very strange history as well. When he was 17, he spent like 6 months in an Israeli kibbutz and things like that. Hmm. And then he went straight out of university into the Labour Party in the sort of
that's the summoning I was referring to.
Yeah,
yes.
it's very it's
brought
very
on by Mandelson.
Weird.
Yes,
you know, for an Irish lad, you know how this is his like life trajectory is very peculiar, and I can't explain it.
I wish I knew how you had to be compromised because you know I could have achieved high political office if I just offered myself up to whatever process it is.
Yeah. So anyway, in going back to the previous. Parliamentary appearance where we started. Diane Abbott absolutely destroys Keir Starmer here, and we'll watch a bit of it because it's funny.
The Prime Minister has gone on at considerable length about process and procedure, but ordinary people don't really care about process and procedure. They want transparency, and they want to know that they can have confidence in the words of elected politicians, like all of us in this chamber. On the question of Peter Mandelson, it was in the 90s that Peter Mandelson had to resign from the cabinet for the first time because of his dealings with the millionaire Geoffrey Robertson. It was a few years later he had to resign from the cabinet for the second time because of his relationships with the billionaire Hinduja family. Peter Mandelson has a history.
Based Diane Abbott gets it exactly. It's not like Peter Mandelson wasn't some known property. There's nowhere to hide here. There's absolutely nowhere to hide. And in fact, it was John McDonnell who really drove the nail home on this.
Right. And isn't the reality this? That when he sought to realise his ambition to become leader of the Labour Party, with very little base within the party, he became dependent on McSweeney and Mandelson and Labour together to organise, fund his election. Yes. And that when he became Prime Minister, the reward for McSweeney was control of Number 10, and for Mandelson, the highest diplomatic office. And the message, the unspoken message to civil servants was, what Mandelson wants, Mandelson gets. This has damaged the party that I've been a member of for 50 years. I urge him to take steps to clear this toxic culture out of our party and take the first step by having an independent inquiry into.
Yep.
Now, it's important to note that McDonnell and Abbott are not a part of the Epstein faction. In fact, they were one of the primary opponents of the Epstein faction.
They're hard left.
They're hard left, right? And so is Jeremy Corbyn. And the Epstein faction used allegations of anti-Semitism to crush them and drive Corbyn out of the party.
You notice that he made reference to Labour working together.
Yes.
So that is basically the Labour Party's officio assassinorum.
Yes.
That is how they basically take people out with what you said. I mean, they will use the anti-Semitism because that normally works, but they use anything else that they need to as well.
Anything they can get their hands on. Mm. But this what he said there, we need to get rid of that toxic culture. He's speaking specifically about the Epstein network.
Yep.
He named the people at the top of it who are in control of the actual infrastructure and the executive function of the party.
Yes.
And he's saying, look, you've got to get rid of these. Now, Starmer's never going to do that. But I mean, he denies this, obviously, because he's never going to do that because he is a creature of this network, because I think this network does work on Compromat, which is why it's the Epstein network and not some other network. But it's all coming out, and Starmer's being left holding this hot potato. And I think John McDonnell's right. The Epstein network is the patron of Starmer in the Labour Party. It's how he got his position, as McDonnell told him. He didn't have an organic base, but he had the backing of these people who have deep pockets and strong grips.
Well, and you can understand why John McDonnell in particular is upset about this, because, of course, he was the number two for Jeremy Corbyn.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, this
Dan is Abbott, the number three.
Well, yes. And this was an old battle that Tony Blair had previously won, which was expunging the hard left and bringing in the Blairite, the compromise fraction, as you might think of it. And then the hard left was basically pushed aside. And then they had that brief moment of revival when Corbyn unexpectedly became leader because Ed Miliband foolishly changed the rules so that anyone could sign up for £5. I signed up under like 10 different names. And then
he lost to Theresa May.
Yes. And then he had got sort of pushed out of this. So for him, this is an entirely sort of personal, bit of a personal vendetta as well.
Was it Theresa May or Boris Johnson who crushed Corbyn, actually?
No, it would have been...
I'm sure it was May. It was 2017.
No, it was May. May won very, very narrowly.
That's
against
right, because she had a majority and then it was a lot shakier.
Well, so she called an early election and then Corbyn lost, but he lost on far more votes and a higher vote share than Keir Starmer won on.
And they kept coping about it, saying, look, we won that election. It's like, no, you did lose. It's like, yeah, okay, we didn't lose as bad as we thought we were going to.
Yeah, but they lost well.
Which is a victory for us. You know?
But the reason why he's so offended by this is because during that Corbyn process, Starmer had himself suitably oiled and attached to Corbyn.
Starmer was awful. He completely basically lied to the Labour Party membership, saying, no, I'm one of you, I'm one of you. And then the second he gains power, Corbyn's out. He nearly kicked Diane Abbott out. He nearly kicked John McDonnell.
Well, no, he tried to on both of them.
Yeah.
In fact, on Diane Abbott, he got overturned.
Yeah.
But it was quite a fight. But she's so well entrenched in Tower Hamlets or wherever it is that she's
Hackney.
That's it. Wherever she was, But this entire time where he was Shadow Chancellor, Starmer was there, oiled and attached, and being a spokesman. And what he was doing is because he was a fresh MP at that point, he was building his power levels with the network being run by McSweeney. Yep. So that the moment the Labour Labour Friends working together or something like that, he mentioned.
I think it's just called Labour Together.
Labour Together, yeah. So as soon as the officio assassinorum of the Labour Party could remove Corbyn, the moment that he lost an election, suddenly Starmer flipped. It was like, I never actually was your guy, even though I spent the last 5 years telling you I was a guy.
Anti-Semitism is unacceptable.
And now I'm going to use the Labour Friends Together thing to have you taken out.
Yes. And this is the Starmer McSweeney sort of control and the Mandelson control of the sort of core infrastructure of the Labour Party.
But it's all dark arts. It's none of it is front-facing. It's all behind the scenes.
And all of this was in-facing perfectly well with the civil service until Trump dropped the bomb on them.
Yes.
Right. And this is the thing we've got to remember. It's like, no, these people are not being wrenched apart because they want to be. They were very happy doing everything behind the scenes.
Because somebody's going to sink into the oil and Starmer's damned if it's him.
But none of this was happening until Trump wrenches open this ray of light onto it. You know, they were completely happy to go along with it. Anyway, so Going back to the McSweeney thing, I'm just going to summarize a bunch of things. So I was watching it. I watched it before we came on to record this. Morgan's basically confessing everything. He says that Peter Mandelson would not have got the job if Kamala Harris had been elected US president. So Peter Mandelson was chosen specifically by Keir Starmer, even though Keir Starmer doesn't like Peter Mandelson. And I think it's because Peter Mandelson is best buddies with Jeffrey Epstein, sends him all of the information and all this stuff. And the Epstein network is embedded in the Trump
administration. Yeah, I mean, there is a dark interpretation of that, which is what you just said, which is having, if somebody from the network gets in on the US side, we need our best man in the network to go and interface with their network men.
And if Kamala Harris had won, well, I guess they would have chosen someone else.
Yeah.
I mean, the two people...
They would have found somebody that lines up with her network.
The two people who were up for the ambassador job were Mandelson and George Osborne. Now, I'm not saying anything about George Osborne. I don't know anything about George Osborne, really. I mean, he was the chancellor, but like, you know, in this, when it comes to the dark arts and the mysteries surrounding the back end of politics, I don't know if he's involved, but the question becomes raised, well, okay, it was Mandelson for Trump, but if Kamala had won, would it have been Osborne? I don't know. Why was he even up for the job? Like, what?
Well,
why?
I mean, it's not like Osborne is completely divorced from that network. I mean, bear in mind that him and Mandelson were, you know, it was a minor scandal at the time, but a scandal nonetheless. They were both on the same billionaire's yacht, private party. So it's not like Osborne is completely out of that world.
No.
He's maybe not as ingratiated as Mandelson, but he's not out of it either.
Yeah, and like I said, I'm not casting any aspersions on Osborne. I don't know anything about Osborne's personal life behind the scenes. But the question is just, why was he the other guy? And it kind of implies, okay, I've got two people, seems to be dependent on who wins the election. That's what it sounds like to me. Anyway, he carries on and says that Mandelson was picked because Donald Trump won. As I said, Keir Starmer did not have enough information because Mandelson did not share the necessary information. BS, everyone knows.
Well, and also because he didn't ask.
You didn't ask, but also, like Dan Abbott pointed out, it's Mandelson.
Yes.
Everyone knows he's, you know, oh, Mandelson claims, I'm not Jeffrey Epstein's friend anymore. It's like, look, there are pictures of him giving Epstein birthday cakes and things like this. Like, look, no one thinks this.
And that was known at the time.
Yeah, yeah. None of this was a secret at all.
Yeah,
long-term knowledge. And Morgan McSweeney says he thought Mandelson cared about his party and country and would at least be honest with his prime minister, which, no, but none of you expected to have to go through this process because none of you thought the Epstein files had dropped.
And also Starmer didn't speak to him. So you know, even if Mandelson was a, you know, even if he's got the worst poker face of the world and he would have gushed it all out on light examination, Starmer didn't ask him any of it. He didn't even meet with him.
But he doesn't want to, right? Because as Emily Thornberry pointed out, they don't like each other. He doesn't like Mandelson. Like, he's not Starmer's kind of guy. They wouldn't actually hang out. Anyway, another point that was made is that Keir Starmer held a meeting in mid-December where a decision was made to appoint Lord Mandelson as US ambassador. There's no record of this meeting. There's no minutes of the discussions or the reason at the time. The Cabinet Office simply can't find it. It doesn't appear to exist. So it really is a significant meeting on the appointment of the US ambassador, one which had huge ramifications for Starmer's premiership. It only appears to exist in the memory of those who were present, as in, this was done off the record, right? So we were trying to keep as much as we can off the record because nobody really wants it. Because, I mean, you don't think that the Epstein files are going to drop, but maybe they do. And anyway, and then you've got Mandelson giving the highest level of security clearance, which again is really weird. And I think it does tie into the fact that Mandelson was the person who drove out the Corbynites because, of course, they're not a part of the Epstein network. McSweeney ends up claiming that he didn't know anything about this. It was a knife through my soul when I discovered the extent of Mandelson's links to Jeffrey Epstein.
Well, yeah, because that's his...
Bollocks.
Well, that's because... what he's wounded there of is that Mandelson is his sire, and now that his dark sire is being, you know, splashed with holy water or however it works in the criminal justice system, he's affected by that. It's a key node in his network is being damaged. That's why he's upset.
Yeah. Anyway, so what we're seeing is the two warring factions in Labour, the Corbynites and the Epstein Network. They're not the only factions, but they're the two that are currently at war. And the Corbynites have really struck hard here because the Epstein files have exposed the Epstein Network. Another thing that Ollie Robbins pointed out is that they were pressuring him to give Matthew Doyle some ambassadorship. Again, the guy disgraced because he was campaigning for a paedophile. For anyone who doesn't know, this is Baron Doyle. But he was still given the peerage, despite the links to it. He's still Lord Doyle. He hasn't even been forced to resign as well. Mandelson was at least forced to leave the House of Lords, but not Lord Doyle for some reason.
I mean, this must have been quite difficult for Ollie Robbins because he is a career civil service. And at the time of this, there were cuts to the Foreign and Commonwealth Office, meaning that he was having to fire a great number of very senior, very experienced diplomats. And then two of the plushest jobs go to two Labour apparatchiks with no diplomatic experience whatsoever.
But people who seem to be connected to the same network.
Well, there is that.
Which appears to involve compromat.
Yes.
And the long-running question about Epstein and the political influence network that he was peddling was how do they maintain loyalty and control over their network? And it seems to be through this kind of dark compromise. And on that note, a fifth rent boy has hit the Twin Towers. A fifth one has been arrested over arson attacks on properties linked to Keir Starmer.
Yeah, now you remind me of this. I'm changing my mind. I'm glad that in my younger years, nobody explained to me how to get into this network because...
Yeah. Because it seems to be quite dark. And now we can only make inferences on the evidence that the data points that present themselves.
This fifth arrest, is he like just out of interest? I haven't seen the fifth arrest. Is he out of interest just like all the other ones, which is to say, I don't know, young, boyish, good looking in a sort of boyish
I haven't seen a picture of this
way. I mean,
and they haven't released his name.
Right.
This was a 19-year-old who was arrested.
So hang on. He's 19 now?
Yes.
He's as of today, he's 19?
Yes, according to...
And Keir Starmer lived at those addresses like 4 or 5 years ago?
Something like that. The fifth man... These were properties linked to Keir Starmer, but in fact, we've got...
Hang on a second.
The trial has begun. It began yesterday, right?
Right.
So we're from Labour Heartlands, left-wing news, views and opinion... We are informed. And by the way, there's no reporting restriction on the Rent Boy trial. And we know because a few of our friends are down there reporting on it. Nothing very interesting.
Oh, nothing will happen early on, yeah.
But the point is there's no reporting restrictions, but none of the press are there.
Oh, thank goodness we got people there then.
Exactly. Anyway, the alleged incidents unfolded 5 days in North London in May 2025. The first occurred on the 8th of May when a car was set alight in a residential street in Kentish Town. 3 days later, on the 11th of May, a fire broke out the front door of a house converted into flats in Islington. A further fire occurred in the early hours of 12th of May at a property at the same Kentish Town street. The Kentish Town property was the home where Keir Starmer lived before he became Prime Minister and moved into Downing Street. He no longer lives at any of the properties at the time of the fires. No injuries were reported either.
So hang on, when did Keir Starmer become Prime Minister? That was only 2 years ago. So
yeah,
okay. So technically, that latest one, he could have been over 16 at least when he had cause to be upset with.
Well, that's the thing.
Keir Starmer's back door.
It implies that the events that these young men are angry at Keir Starmer for,
whatever they may be,
happens. Yeah, so who knows what they could be?
Yes,
happened several, if not many, years ago.
Well, hopefully it was the day before he became Prime Minister, whatever the event was, because at least that way they would be over 16, which isn't saying, I mean, some of them would have been under 18, but they would have at least been, but yeah, actually he lived there for a number of years and it could well be 4 or 5 years ago.
Would line up quite well with the sort of thing we got out of the Epstein files. I mean, here's Mandelson and Epstein. We are praying for a hung parliament in 2010. Alternatively, a well-hung young man. I mean... Mandelson himself is gay and not great surprise. But the point is, this is... I don't know. Yeah. Who knows?
That's from... The top one is from... Oh, no, that's from Peter Mandelson, the top one.
Yeah.
Because Epstein likes girls, but...
It seems that way.
Mandelson, yeah, it would seem like boys. Okay, fine, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And
because a lot of these young men, they were on these apps, weren't they? on these apps where if you, I think they're male modeling. That's how they describe themselves, male right. modeling apps. So that if, you know, it's, I don't know, 3 o'clock on Saturday morning.
And you just happen to.
And you just need a bit of modeling done.
Yeah.
You can get one of these very young boyish men to turn up and do a spot of modeling for you because, I don't know, maybe you just need that for
yeah.
whatever reason.
And so that's all quite weird and yeah. inexplicable stuff. And then you remember where Starmer became the first prime minister to take a HIV test, which is bloody weird and inexplicable, isn't it?
I mean, if he were to just quietly go and have an HIV test, being quite famous, that's the sort of thing that would leak. Mm. So you probably can't do that. But what you can do is you can do it in your charisma vacuum way on TV. While being boring,
yeah.
while claiming to raise awareness, and you get the same outcome. You get your HIV test.
While committing to end new HIV cases in England by 2030.
Is Keir Starmer doing his bit to make sure that HIV isn't spread? I don't know.
It was negative for him, so that's good news.
Well, that is encouraging.
And then this also ties into rumours swirling around. Now, I can't confirm or deny any of this, but Dan Wootton, who is himself quite plugged into these things, you'll see here that Starmer says his wife, Victoria, is encouraging him to stay on as prime minister. I confide in her all the time. Her's the best advice. Just thankful I got her every day. And Dan Wootton rebuts this, saying, no, this is a complete lie. Lady Victoria Starmer no longer resides in Downing Street with the children. She's more miserable than she's ever been and wants him out ASAP. She's being used as a political tool based on a fantasy. Now, I don't know what the state of Keir Starmer's marriage
is. Lady?
I don't know.
But, I didn't realise she was nobility.
Well, I mean, maybe she was given a peerage or something as well. I don't know. I didn't look into it, to be honest. Mm. But the point here is, it sounds like there's something in Keir Starmer's personal yes. life that we're not being told about. Now, I mean, there are rumours and allegations of him handling like a bastard child and things like this. Now, like I said, I don't know any of this.
Well, if the wife isn't in the house, she wouldn't be there while the male modelling jobs are going on.
I guess not.
She might have some sort of creative insight on how to model effectively.
You might think, but yeah. the point is, it's not. It looks like, I mean, there's very rarely smoke without fire, right?
Yes,
especially literally your front door being set on fire by strangely attractive Ukrainian young men. Like, why
was it his front door that was burning, or was it his back door?
I think it was actually the front door.
His front door, okay.
Set on fire.
Yeah.
But the point is, it may be that Keir Starmer is, in private, exactly the kind of man who would be compromised by the Epstein network.
No comment.
I'm not saying this is definitely true. I don't know. But these are all, again, data points that are being made very publicly.
I can understand why some people might start to ask questions here. I mean, personally, I'm completely satisfied.
I'm not sure I want the answers.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be arrested myself, so I draw no further inference. However, I can understand that one or two people watching this may possibly draw some conclusions.
Yeah, you're connected to the Epstein network via Mandelson. You have Ukrainian young men attacking where you used to live.
Yeah.
And you've taken a HIV test.
And your wife has moved out and is miserable.
I mean, I'm just saying, I feel like there's more of a story there that we're not being told. But anyway.
Possible, isn't it? Yeah.
So is Starmer the kind of person who could be compromised by the Epstein network? Well, maybe. I don't know, right? Now, so let's move on to what Starmer is going to do. So how do the public think Starmer's doing? Well, across basically every way that they're asked, they hate him. Does he stand up for Britain abroad? Now, that's his best characteristic, actually.
Ooh.
The fact that he, as you see, is minus 20% approval rating on that.
Minus 20% is as good as it gets.
That's literally the best one on this list, yeah. Because he didn't get involved in the Iran War.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, fair enough, obviously not good on Chagos. That's Lord Hermer's fault, so don't worry. You know, but he agrees with it. He's the Prime Minister. But you can see, acting in the nation's best interest, not really. Competent, my God. You know, nearly minus 40. Sticks to principles, no.
I've never heard him articulate a principle. Oh, apart from all the wanky twaddle about diversity is our strength, and that's the only principle I've ever heard.
Crushing anti-Semitism and Islamophobia. His primary principle is keeping the native English people down in their place.
Actually, that's true. That's true. Those are the principles.
Yeah.
He, yes.
Yeah.
So, so actually, he does stick to his principles. Why is that?
Just evil.
Well, yeah, but he sticks to them.
Yeah. But, you know, decisive. Now, this decisive one's a bit unfair. He's bloody decisive. He kicked out Corbyn. He's literally like Stalin in the way that he has operated the Labour Party. So he is actually decisive. It's just, it's evil and actually, in a way that is not wanted.
The public is just wrong in those last two, because you're right, he does stick to his principles
and getting things done as
well. The native British, and he is decisive about it. And so what was the other one you said?
Getting things done. Again, yeah, people think
he does that as well.
Yeah. He's getting a lot done. I mean, abolishing jury trials is a decisive, effective executive action.
Yes.
That's getting, I mean, it's just people don't like the things that he's doing. Like he's doing evil. And it's like,
but he's doing it competently.
He actually is, you know, trustworthy. Well, not for you, but for someone else's network, he is pretty trustworthy, actually. Yes. You know, he's getting the job done. He's brave. He's being trusted with big decisions. For someone else, they're all going to say, yes, no, Keir Starmer's our man. Of course, you being on the raw end of the cutting edge, you're going to be like, no, I don't like this. And so, of course, you can see likable there right at the bottom. Strong leader, shares my views, is really bad. In touch with ordinary people and represent most people's views. No, he represents the Epstein network very, very effectively. But the point is, nobody likes him. But the problem that Labour have is that nobody really likes anyone else either. Here's YouGov asking, well, I mean, you know, who would do a better job? And Andy Burnham, kind of.
Oh, he's this clear standout choice, but
36% of the public don't know enough about it anyway. So, like, almost half of people, like, I don't know, or I don't like him.
So what's his net approval there? Is it the left-hand
34.
34.
Much better or somewhat better. 34. Okay, a third of people think you'll be better than the most hated prime minister ever. That's terrible. Like, good God, man. Like, you'd think just putting up a literal empty suit would at least put you on zero. Like, but you're not even in, you don't even have half of the people being like.
I mean, that is a ridiculously low bar. If anybody can do a better job than Keir Starmer, And I can literally finish the sentence there. Anybody can do a better job than Keir Starmer.
And Andy Burnham, but don't get me wrong, about the same, somewhat better, much better job. It's about 50%, you know, just over 50%. Yep. Like, yeah, okay, you know, yeah. But that's...
But he's not in Parliament, so...
But because Keir Starmer blocked him, because he is actually effective.
Yes.
At these sort of machinations.
I mean, Keir Starmer did save his political career by doing so, because otherwise he would have lost a by-election.
But then look at Angela Rayner. I mean, much better job or somewhat better job.
Yes.
What's that, about 20%, if that? I don't know, 17%, something like that?
So she...
Too small to even see the number.
So she would be my choice if I was in Labour, because she's the only one who has a sort of personality that isn't set to repel.
Sure, but 37% of people think she'd just do a worse job because she's a moron.
Oh yeah, she is a moron, and she doesn't understand any of what's going on behind the scenes.
Very doubtful.
Yes,
but again, why did Keir Starmer surround himself with these people? We'll come on to that in a minute. Actually, Ed Miliband, again, about the same number of people.
He's actually a competent minister. He's not doing good.
Sure.
He is impoverishing us and making us poorer and giving us less energy in a competent way.
About 15% of people think he'll do a better job than Keir Starmer. That's not exactly a vote of confidence, is it? Wes Streeting, same. Yvette Cooper, even less. Shabana Mahmood, even less. David Lammy, the bar's too small to even show a number on it.
No,
5%. Like...
Actually, it has to be David Lemmy for the memes, doesn't it? It'd just be hilarious.
Yeah, and that is just the general public. Then you've got 2024 Labour voters, but those numbers aren't even that much better. Like, this is not a great vote of confidence. For about the same or don't know enough is most people on each one of these. So this is not an endorsement. Like, the Epstein network might be evil and they might have complete control of the Labour Party and they might have the worst and most hated man in the world in it.
Yes.
But you don't have a strong alternative.
So Burnham is Blairite. Yvette Cooper is very Blairite. Wes Streeting is Blairite.
Yeah, but Wes Streeting, yeah, correct. But a lot of them are quite close to the soft left, because these are categories with permeable borders and
boundaries. So Angela Rayner is soft left. David Lammy is soft left. Shabana Mahmood.
She's right wing.
Yeah.
She's right of the Reform Party. So the point is, nobody is really very persuaded that Labour has any good options, actually.
No.
And again, more polling on this. Well, who would you prefer? Well, a quarter of Labour voters in 2024 would prefer Andy Burnham. 10% want Angela Rayner. But none of them is 12% and don't know is 23%. So the none of the above, if we just add those two together, are storming ahead. But then if it's just among all voters, none of them at 28%. Andy Burnham's only on 17% with all voters. Like 28% are just like, no, I don't want any of these people. And 27% like, don't know. Like, I mean, half of voters just like, check it. Nothing.
But look at it the point of view of a Labour MP, right? Yeah. Current polling suggests you're on track for 4 seats. So it's...
Well, it's not entirely that. I mean, like, some polling has them on about 70 seats. Some polling has...
Oh, yeah, okay.
So let's say 35 seats.
So the probability of you losing your seat is somewhere between 75% and 99%. My point is...
That's pretty rough.
My point is,
yeah. You
might as well just roll the dice. Andy Burnham isn't an option... Angela Rayner is too stupid to even have a faction. She doesn't understand what's going on. She doesn't get the depths of the political nuances at all, right? But she has a personality and she's a bit bubbly and some people like her when they first see her. So just roll the dice.
Go rave with her or something. Yes. Don't want her in charge of the country, which is what literally 5% of people want in the country. 5% would prefer her to be the...
Yeah, she could be... You know,
I'm sure she's great for a night
out. Cool teacher at the kindergarten round the corner or something.
But, well, I could go for a beer with Angela Rayner, totally fine, but come on. But this is really interesting, though, isn't it? Because not only have Labour never been less popular, but essentially their entire careers now depend on Starmer not backstabbing them all. Because if they think, oh, well, we're going to take him out, and we'll come into what's going on underneath this in a minute, Starmer can just call a general election
anytime
he wants. Right. Yeah. He literally holds the sword of Damocles above their heads.
Yeah.
And anyway, let's carry on and we'll follow that line of thought.
All right, we come back on that because absolutely.
Yeah. So this is a party leader favored by most by region, right? Zach Polanski is at +3% in Scotland. In Wales it's Farage. In the Midlands it's Farage, and in the North it's Farage. In the South it's Badenoch, weirdly enough.
Hmm.
And only in London +2 is it Starmer. So you can see, actually, what does Starmer represent?
Yeah.
He represents the civil service and the blob that he's currently at war with, and he has no natural constituency outside of that. This is where he exists as an entity.
Yeah.
And, you know, the connection to the larger Epstein network is literally just at the you know, it's sort of occupying the brain of the country. And the body of the country is like, no, anything but this.
This is starting to look like, I don't know, medieval France, where Paris is just this like fortress city that kind of rules the country, but not really. It just sends out raids into the rest of the country and issues forth devastation, takes the plunder and lays down the law and then clears back off to Paris again.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Right. Where, so you've got this issue here, and then you've got the issue that nobody actually wants the Labour Party, as we've just covered.
Yes.
So that means that Starmer is projected to lose his seat to the Greens, but also Corbyn is projected to lose his seat to the Greens. So these two warring factions who have spent ages taking chunks out of each other are both going to be kicked out of government and kicked out of Parliament. Like, the Labour Party is going to come. I mean, look, like in Island North, the Labour Party is third. In Corbyn's, high seat. But even then, it's second in Holborn and St Pancras, which is Starmer's seat. Again, these were just Labour heartlands.
Oh.
Like, Labour losing, and Labour aren't going to completely lose London, but they're going to lose a lot of London in the May 7th elections. And so these, again, it's the public is like, look, we don't care about the Epstein network's argument with the communists. You know, we don't care.
Yes,
we're not up for it. We don't care. We don't want that.
But they are lowering each other's HP while the Greens come storming in like the final boss of communism.
And you know, you can say whatever you like about Zach Polanski.
Yes.
He's an inveterate enemy of the Epstein network. He's obviously he hates Israel, and he's surrounded by people who just religiously couldn't qualify for the Epstein network. So, you know, like he's not part of that. He's something else that's evil, but he's not part of the Epstein network. And so the Labour Party are like, hang on a second. the things we're doing seem kind of mad now, right? In light of all of this happening, like, are we sure we want to give under 16s votes? They ain't voting for us anymore. They're voting for the people who are going to defense.
Oh, that backfired. I mean, that is the biggest backfire since giving US police body cams as a Black Lives Matter demand. Because, yeah, all of those 16 to 18-year-olds, like 90% of them are going to vote for the Greens.
They've lost the argument on that. Because why? They don't want to vote for the Epstein Network.
Yeah.
And they literally call it the Epstein Network themselves. I'm lifting this terminology from the Greens because I think they are right to call it the Epstein Network. Because I think that's literally people connected to Jeffrey Epstein through various means because of various reasons. But Starmer isn't going to let this happen. He's going to go down fighting, right? He's going to plot to get out of the sleaze inquiry by whipping the Labour MPs to vote down any attempt to have the parliamentary sleaze inquiry, as in, basically, he's going to kick them out of the Labour Party if they even think about opposing him.
You are not supposed to use a three-line whip for that.
But you're not supposed to do anything that Starmer's doing.
Well,
Starmer's been through scandal after scandal after scandal after scandal. And literally, I'm sick of hearing Jacob Rees-Mogg going, well, he's finished now. He's going to have to resign now. It's like, no, Jacob, you don't understand what's happening, bro.
Yeah.
Like, you're thinking in, like, again, the terms of a conservative, in normal times where a scandal would, you know, like Boris Johnson and Chris Pincher was enough to make him resign. Yes. Not now.
Like, well, you played a brilliant clip on this show, maybe 5 or 6 episodes ago, it was a while ago now, and the clip was David Lammy walking down Downing Street, and somebody shouted out, "Are you going to resign?" And he replied back, "I've been waiting 14 years to get here. I'm not going now."
Yes,
exactly the same with. So this guy has been a soulless Fabian since that weird passport photo that keeps getting shown in the press
since when he was 90s.
Yeah.
Like when he went to Czechoslovakia and like probably the 80s, actually.
He's been waiting his whole life for this moment. He will do whatever it takes to cling on.
Yeah. And so, and this is why it's important to think about this in terms of factions. Starmer, Mandelson, McSweeney, Epstein faction at the top of the Labour Party got complete control.
Mm.
His front bench, soft left retards, right?
Yes.
Literally puppeteering these morons, right? As in, I don't care about you at all.
Yes.
I will throw the civil service under the bus.
Yes.
I will throw all of you guys under the bus. And like the Epstein Network has been using the soft left idiots as like cannon fodder.
Were they useful idiots?
They literally are useful idiots.
Yeah.
Because
and that's the danger of having, I mean, I know AA keeps talking about, you know, unified elite. But the problem is this particular elite is so hard to get into that it is by definition very narrow. And it's not even broad enough to encompass an entire government front bench.
No. But it's well prepared to wield power very viciously.
Yeah, yeah.
And Corbyn out, you know, Abbott and Don McDonnell nearly out. Like, skin of the teeth. You know, this is, again, Starmer is literally like Stalin when it comes to this kind of bureaucratic exercise of power.
Mm.
And Starmer thinks he's going to win. We'll get to that. Starmer thinks he's going to win. He thinks he can win the next election, right? And it's like, okay, but that sounds mad.
I mean, given that he's so soulless that it's difficult to know if he actually believes. I don't think he believes it. I think that he wants people to think that he believes that so that he's given the benefit of the doubt until the next election. Actually, holding power until the next election is the real prize here.
But of course, who's giving him support? Well, Lord Hermer. I'm optimistic we're going to win the next election under Sir Keir. Well, this is the Epstein Network of human rights lawyers. Hermer is Starmer's oldest friend. Right?
Isn't he the chap who's embroiled in a fresh new scandal because he was backing bogus claims against British troops in Iraq and Afghanistan?
Correct.
Which has caused many troops to be, well, some have committed suicide, they've been dragged through the courts, have been absolutely persecuted, and it turns out most of it, if not all of it, was entirely made up to win fees and that he was profiting from these malicious charges against troops.
Yeah, he also he got a £1.5 million house without having to pay tax on it recently. I only saw the headline going past, so I haven't looked into it. But the point is, like typical Epstein Network nonsense, right?
But a proper rotter, this one.
Yeah, absolutely. Hermer is an inveterate anti-British enemy Under every circumstance.
Yes.
Like, he was arguing for Shmuel Begum to come across. He wants the Chagos deal sent away. And all the everything, it's all coming from the Attorney General, Richard Hermer, right?
Keir Starmer's one and only true friend.
One and only true friend, which puts him smashed into the Epstein network, right? So we've got the backing of the Epstein network. We've got the backing of his human rights lawyers, compadres. Like, yes. You can see who wants Starmer to remain in their position. And Labour List have come out and put out this propaganda. Now, I'm not saying that there's anything to this, but the point is, this is one of those cases where the polls are designed to lead opinion rather than report opinion. Should Keir Starmer resign over the scandal? 61% of Labour members say he shouldn't. Oh, really? Okay. Even though 83% he's handled it badly, 61% think he should not resign. So there we go. Labour Party members who read Labour List, again, you can see this is part of the network and its functions in the party, essentially saying, no, no, we're not going anywhere.
Yes.
Right? That's the thing. They're not going anywhere. They think they can win. I think Keir Starmer can win. I think I can win. I mean, I don't know why you would think that, because everyone hates you. You are literally the most hated prime minister. Labour's current approval rating is about 15% against 68% negative. Like, it's almost impossible to find someone who does like the Labour Party at this point. I don't even know where I would go. I guess you go to central London, which is where he's got the only approval rating that he's ever that he has in the entire country.
But if he can keep the reins of power for 3 years, he can do a lot in 3 years.
Exactly. And so he has to fend off the soft left. Now, he has been making noises about patriotic values. He intends to fight. I mean, maybe Starmer is literally so delusional he thinks he could beat Nigel Farage on this subject. Nigel Farage's popularity is going down, but if he turns it into a referendum on who is the patriotic party, Labour or Reform, he can't win that. So, like, you know, Nigel Farage's got many, many flaws, but being an anti-British traitor is not one of them, actually.
Yeah. but it won't. It will be a battle between some mix-up between Restore and Reform versus the Greens. Labour are not going to feature in this.
Of course. But he either doesn't know or doesn't care about this, right? Because, like you said...
I think he just wants power for 3 more years to do as much damage as he possibly can until he's kicked out.
Exactly. And so the soft left don't know what to do. Right. So we've got, people like Yvette Cooper. Oh, I'm extremely concerned about all this. I can't believe, like, it's something that they know is wrong, but they don't know what to do. Ed Miliband can't even defend Starmer on this. This is hilarious. Let's watch this quickly.
That whole due diligence report saying Lord Mandelson was a walking red flag. Keir Starmer reads it, decides to appoint a walking red flag to be the US ambassador, and nobody thinks that's a problem at the time.
Well, I think, it was a very risky appointment, and it turns out to be been extremely risky for all the reasons that we now know.
I'm not sure. If I'm watching you, I'm not sure what else anyone needed to tell the person at the top of government about this individual that would have made it clear it wasn't just risky, it was wrong. What else did you need to know at that moment?
Look, it's a fair point. I mean,
that's not how you're supposed to do political interviews.
Well, what could you say? What could you say? Like, Starmer, the Epstein Network and Starmer have stitched up the soft left so comprehensively. They've got to go out there and get grilled like this and be like,
Were you supposed to turn up with like 3 or 4 talking points and just repeat them endlessly and pad them with filler? You're not supposed to actually stop and think about the question because there's no bloody answer to it.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, I disagree with Miliband profoundly politically and on his, you know, policies and politics and whatnot, but I don't think he's an evil man.
No, he's just a weak man.
He's exactly.
Yeah.
Hell yeah, I'm tough enough to stand up to Putin. Okay, Ed. You know,
I've seen him trying to get into a London club. He's not tough enough to stand up to the concierge.
Do you not remember back in, like, 2011 or something like that, where he was being interviewed and he was like, heck yes, I'm tough enough. It's like, look, Ned Flanders, right? Well, I'm sure you're a lovely guy. And everyone says that Ed Miliband's a lovely guy.
Yeah.
But he is
just weak.
He's just weak.
And the definition I keep making the reason the left are the left is because they're low T weak men. That's
Sure.
That's what they are.
But like I said, he's not a part of the Epstein network.
No.
Right? He's very clearly not. And he's very clearly being used as a meat shield while the Epstein network is on maneuvers behind the scenes, trying to essentially shore up their own position because Trump dropped this giant bomb on them by accident. And so the soft left are like, right, okay, are we just going to stand for this? And the answer is, yes, you are.
Yeah.
You're just going to stand for it because every single one of you is going to lose your seat. That's why.
Yeah, because you're threatening a man with the election button.
Exactly.
And if you turf him out, he'll just turf all you out. So.
And also, Keir Starmer, not a career politician. Yep. Keir Starmer, does he have a network of patronage that he can lean into after his job is done? Absolutely, he does.
He'd just go back to campaigning to get, you know, child murderers released like it was beforehand.
If he doesn't just retire and do the speech circuit where he gets like Boris Johnson paying like, you know, $500,000 of bloody speech.
Well, work. I mean, he's Prime Minister's pension alone will cover him, but
exactly. Yeah. Starmer's going to be fine. Mm. You are the guys who are going to get it in the neck. And so, go away, Daily Mail, all your notifications. Dan Hodges points out here, like, everyone loathes Keir Starmer. Like, Dan Hodges goes around, speaks to all the MPs behind the scenes. They all loathe him, and they've all come to the conclusion that actually, this avatar of the Epstein network doesn't have our best interests at heart, doesn't have the best interests of the Labour Party at heart, and has actually thrown so many of us under the bus that maybe, maybe he's the problem, but when? Like, oh, well, if we don't do it now, it's only a matter of time to when he's ousted, not if. It's like, okay, but you have no good time. I mean, you don't want to do it before May the 7th because someone's going to be left.
The gods of Olympus have got together and decided that maybe Kronos isn't acting in their interest.
Yeah, but I mean, like, well, at least the gods of Olympus were capable because they had a Zeus to overthrow Kronos, right? They don't have a Zeus. Their Zeus is Angela Rayner. It's like, God, right? But it's only a matter of time of when he's ousted. It's like, okay, but now should be the time. But you know that they're thinking, well, the May 7th election is coming up. We're going to get creamed. We can't do it before then.
I don't think that should hold you. If you've got the gumption to become prime minister,
you just play it off. Say, that's Starmer's fault.
You just do it. You don't then try and massage your timing. Getting to be prime minister of this country is bloody hard enough without trying to then massage the timing as well.
But also, nobody's going to blame you. Like, if you're like, you know, I had to throw Keir Starmer out because of the Epstein network and everything they've done and they're ruining the party, I had to come along and save it. Oh, yeah, we got creamed in the May 7th elections. Yeah, everyone knows because you were there for like 2 weeks.
It's not you.
Yeah.
The only thing is maybe they think it would just be easier to get rid of him after that.
They do think so. Yeah. But what this also does is give Starmer time. Mm. He needs time to keep shoring up his position. And it's like, because the thing is, the dramatic shock of the May 7th elections has already happened. Everyone knows, you know, tomorrow, the day after, like, yep, you got screwed, did you? Well, we knew that was going to happen. Anyway, moving on. And so, okay, if not now, then when, right? And so we are told by the Telegraph here, they are plotting a coup. As they say, backbench Labour MPs have told the Telegraph the game is already up for the Prime Minister over his disastrous handling of the Mandelson vetting scandal. A senior Labour MP said, I think there's going to be a process for replacing the Prime Minister. It needs to be as quick as it can be. TikTok. Like, what are you doing? Like, you say these things, but Starmer and Hermer and the rest of his close confidence, it's like, no, chest out. We're going to fight the next election and we're going to win it. And so the soft left can like, oh no, we're all now going to have our vote of no confidence or something. No, because Starmer is just going to be like, no, you're not. Election. Bam. You're all done. I'm buggering off to some think tank or whatever I'm going to do. Yeah. And I'm just going to literally nuke the lot of you. Right. Another senior MP said, we can't be having months and months of speculation and leadership contests. That just creates a lot of uncertainty for the country. There's going to be change and the Labour Party needs to work out how that will happen quickly. So they want a coup. They want to have a coup within this structure, but the soft left are the useful idiots and they don't have any leadership. They want Andy Burnham, but Starmer blocked Andy Burnham. Angela Rayner has got her tax problems. And honestly, I don't think she's...
Yeah, and by the way, that tax inquiry... That seems to be getting slow walked.
Yeah, right.
Because all the time...
Why is that taking so long?
Because the whole time that's ongoing, it kind of blocks her from being leader.
Right.
So then you have to go down to the real tertiary tier of idiots.
David Lammy? Like,
yeah.
The band, you know, but that whole thing, it was over 40 grand, like a 40 grand stamp duty on a house. I mean, don't get me wrong, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know, but... It's also stamp duty on a house. It's not that she wasn't like Mandelson taking money from the Russians and the Chinese or connected to the Epstein network.
It's not the sort of thing that gets your back door burning.
No, exactly. Yes. It's totally trivial. And yet, like you say, that's being walked out for a long time. Why can't you just pay that money and get on with it?
Yes.
Like, come on, what's the holdup here? And also, apparently, Starmer is just going to throw them under the bus, right? Starmer doesn't get, if the local elections are a bloodbath, that's right, Rachel Reeves, again, another soft left moron, under the bus. Everything to protect the primacy of the Epstein network in the Prime Minister's chair. Not a civil servant, not a soft left member of the government,
yeah.
Not Morgan McSweeney. None of them will be spared Starmer chucking them straight under the bus.
And weirdly, I mean, okay, we've now got to the position where UK bond yields are 5%, which is higher than they were under the peak of the Liz Truss moment. They're constantly
going about Liz Truss ruining it. It's like, well, we're way past that.
So bonds are at 5%. We are in the alarm bell. The smoke alarm is pinging at this point. But weirdly, the bond market actually quite like Rachel Reeves, and that's not because they think that she's competent, but they think that everyone else would be more incompetent than she is. So if you appoint somebody else, things could get lively on the financial front.
Yep.
And we're already at the point where the debt expenditure is rivaling the NHS spend.
Yeah. Yeah, it's mad. Yeah. It's mad. The country's on the edge of a meltdown.
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, I think what we've seen here is that there is a faction in the Labour Party we call the Epstein Network. It's got rock solid control of the administration of the country. It has the nuclear button, the general election,
and the spite to use it,
and the will to use it. And again, the soft left, the Rainerites, who are limping along, thinking, "Well, we have to do something."
Yeah.
But none of them are brave. None of them have a personal sort of magnetism or constituency. And any that might have done, Starmer has destroyed already, right? So and kept out of the party. And they're being used as useful idiots, being chucked under the bus for this. The Corbynistas have been mostly expelled and sent to the Green Party or to your party, which is...
Well, and the hard left are the only faction that has the rival mental faculty.
Will to power.
To fight, yeah, the will to power.
Soft left don't have a will to power.
No.
The Corbynistas have the will to power, but they've been expelled, so they've gone to the Green Party.
Mm.
And so what have you got left? What, the trade unions? Well, Farage has actually been flirting with them.
Yeah, they're off as well.
Yeah, they're off. And I watched an interview with the trade union boss the other day, and Farage was talking about how, well, you know, we accept the trade unions are a fact of life and we're prepared to work with them. It's like, well, that's dangerous territory if you're Labour, isn't it?
Mm.
Like, we're going to lose the unions. And then I guess the last thing you've got is like Blue Labour under Maurice Glassman, who does nothing but go on TV and says Starmer's terrible.
Yeah, but that's not a real thing.
It's not a real thing.
That has no traction.
Anyone who is like Blue Labour voter, again,
they're already voting for the Conservatives.
Or Reform. They're already voting Reform. So basically, there's not much left in the Labour Party to actually resist,
and the
coup of the soft left is never going to happen because of the lack of will's power.
No.
Corbynistas now have no access to that because Starmer destroyed them. And so it's like, look, I think that the Epstein network is going to destroy the Labour Party forever. And so three more years, right. I say.
Yeah.
And that's the end of Labour forever.
Well, and it'd be useful for our thing because Restore could actually do with those 3 years. So
absolutely. So
it's a bit of a shame for the country and bond yields. And
it's like none of the other people would make things better.
No, that's
and
true.
It would just be like limping on for another election cycle where it's like, oh God, another 5 years of us not addressing the problems, blah, blah, blah. So honestly, I think for the actual right, this is a good thing. I think for the actual country, just destroying the Labour Party because it's long past its prime and needs to go here is good anyway. And I just think this is basically what's happening. And it's a quite exciting little Game of Thrones episode, really. Shame it has an effect on real life.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.